You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Friday afternoon. It is the 6th day of June, 2014. Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas, joins us. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Joins us on this D-Day 70th anniversary, Todd.
It is an important date in history, one where hundreds and thousands of men put their lives on the line to make sure that we could live the way we do today.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Do you know anybody that managed to make it through Omaha Beach?
No, I did not ever get to meet anybody. My dad was in a pharmacist capacity and did troop trains from essentially New Orleans up to Chicago, and took care of wounded. And so when we talked about that and a couple of his buddies that came in on Mom and Dad's 50th wedding anniversary, actually one buddy and his wife, they talked about it a little bit. It was the first time in my life that I ever heard him talk about it. So not unlike, you know, what Tom Brokaw discussed.
Yeah, oftentimes nobody really wanted to talk about what happened. I went on the honor flight with my father a year ago in May. It was one of the most important things I've ever done in my life. It was truly amazing. And even then, they're pretty silent. I know one man, a farmer that was a neighbor, who was a POW in Germany, never, ever said anything about his experiences. Both my father and Jerry May are both still alive and with us, and really happy that they can be. And really, for all of those folks who serve us now and served us at World War II, we owe a great debt of gratitude.
And never be able to repay it, that's for sure. Yeah, it's interesting because there was a fellow that I met through the family that he was Latvian, and he escaped from a Nazi prison camp, and he actually came over to the United States, and he was one of the main people that started making those yellow, golden Century 21 jackets. And what a fascinating guy, that rags to riches, you know, really typical story of how you can do anything once you go through something like that.
One other note, and I've been to several World War II museums. Mike, I don't know whether you have or not. The one in New Orleans is really neat. I have been to one in Ypres, Belgium, extraordinary. The one in Kiev, Ukraine, probably is the saddest place I have ever been. They lost, I think, one in three men. Is that right? I'm pretty sure that's correct. They lost about 9 million during the war.
Wow.
In total. So the population was devastated, and their memorials are just heart-wrenching. And even the drive up to that particular museum, they bent the small trees so they looked like they were bowed in sorrow.
I'll be darned. That's interesting.
Yeah,
wow. That's really,
really
something. I bet that will never leave your memory.
No. And that was years and years ago now. Like here in the United States, it had an imprint across the planet. It was an unbelievable event. Let's turn our attention, though, Mike, now on this 6th day of June, to what happened in Chicago at the CME Group. There are some numbers that are pretty extraordinary. In the corn pit, a dime higher for the nearby July. December futures back above 450, actually both of those above 450. And feeder cattle, they finished above $200 in several of the contracts. But I do want to get to one number that I found pretty interesting once I drew out the numbers and the weekly changes for Commodity Week. They posted an upside down in bean meal.
Yeah, I think you had a lot of spreading there. And, you know, one of the things that our colleague Ellen Dearden sent me a chart this morning of this Chinese soybean meal and how tough that market looks. And I think what's happening in China right now is you're seeing a lot of state reserves being released, and that's of soybeans, and that's allowing the domestic crusher to come in and get a cheaper bean price domestically and maybe take the pressure off the imports. Having said that, though, Todd, one of the big things that happened this week here in this country, and probably the reason for this meal oil shift in trend as far as the spreading, was that many crushers across the country from Ohio to Nebraska went from July to August in their bean processing bid, and that shook the market up for about 20 cents midweek, and that seemed to really cut the legs out from under the charts in meal and in beans. I think that's probably their trump card being played at this stage of the game, because what I'm still picking up is there's an extreme tightness in the meal. There's an extreme tightness in the beans. The actual exports this week were 7.8 million bushels. We only need 2.2 to meet USDA's target. The actual sales came in at 1.5 million bushels for old crop beans, current crop year beans. That's 3% above USDA's projection. So we keep on this track of a million, million and a half of exports going out and no imports coming in. You're back to like a 1.62, 1.63, maybe even a 1.64 type export number. So this is probably the most important feature to next Wednesday's report when it comes to the soybeans, is does July NOV get reinvigorated from USDA's number?
And so you say they played their trump card. Does that mean they were just trying to hold her down and there's more upside left in that marketplace?
I really believe that, but I think from an economic standpoint, they've got to realize that that discourages the imports, it discourages the farmers from letting go what little he may have left, and it really encourages the export market to stay very competitive with the world markets. And I think we're probably, around 75% sold in Brazilian beans at this stage. So that last 20-25% of beans are probably going to be held onto pretty tightly unless our prices climb.
Why is it that wheat futures jumped so sharply today?
I think the biggest thing was we were just overdone, bottom line, overdone given the harvest data that we're getting out of Texas and Oklahoma. We've been getting harvest data for almost 2 weeks now. 7 bushels, 10 bushels, 15 bushels on hard red wheat, not uncommon, actually very common and kind of the trend right now, and a lot of people reporting that they've already filed claims and have been zeroed out. So then comes this weekend rain forecast for Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle, right where they're wanting to harvest, and you're looking at 4 to 6 inches of rain if the GFS or the North American or the European models are correct, and all three of them agree that it's going to be some really heavy rain right in that area. If that's the case, you're going to lose a lot, and you're going to see a lot of quality go by the wayside if that kind of rain comes in. So you notice hard red wheat put the bottom in first on Wednesday. All these lows from this week, Todd, I think are extremely important, whether you're talking Dease corn, Nove beans, July wheat, hard red wheat, it doesn't matter. I think they're extremely important after the report comes out on Wednesday. You hold those lows, you're in good shape technically and I think fundamentally, and you probably have a seasonal cycle low in place. But if you take those lows out after the report, you got to look at it at face value, in my view.
Corn just overdone as well and bounced, and will it consolidate or?
Partially. I think partially was led by the wheat, but then the second half of the day, we got an interesting news wire that the U.S. EPA is going to extend their compliance deadline for the 2013 biofuel mandate all the way to September. And I guess, this is a stretch, but I'm guessing that the EPA is punting on the mandate until they get closer to the midterm elections. But I think the market saw it that way, at least, and we saw August ethanol jump very quickly after that news wire was released, August ethanol ending up 2.5%. So wheat came in, underpinned us, put our low in for us, and then we got this ethanol news, and I think shorts really ran for the doors at that point.
And then one other number that I think jumps out at me, this one in the hogs, July futures on the weekly, it posted an outside up week too.
You can't ignore the hog market right now because I think it's playing catch up with the beef market, and the fund selling that went on in May and the first couple days of June were immense. I mean, we really cleaned house there, and I think you're getting back to the beef, pork, summer grilling fundamentals that we talked about this morning. You know, one of the things that really hit me hard this week was this European Central Bank coming in and moving towards quantitative easing. They haven't done it yet, but they're taking their interest rates down to zero and saying that they will quantitative ease if they need to. I think the gold market and the dollar market really expected that and predicted that and forecasted that very well and anticipated it. Now that's out of the way, we might see commodity bulls in a general mindset start to walk back in from a standpoint of the investor class, because you're making all-time highs in the S&P and you're probably running out of news to feed the bull in the equities. And so I think you're probably trying to get to that point where if you're an investor class, you're probably looking for a place to put your money, and some of these commodities may be the place to do it, especially if the Fed continues to tighten.
Thanks for taking the time. Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend, sir.
Mm-hmm. That is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and marketing. Joins us on this Friday afternoon edition of the Closing Market Report. Don't forget to stay with us if you can on our home radio station or listen to us at willag.org after about 4 o'clock this afternoon. For Commodity Week, our panelists today will include Sherm Newland out of Risk Management Commodities, Jackie Banks of Stuart Peterson, Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises, and special guest, Alan Brugler, Brugler Marketing and Management.